same time, because you have not adequately provided for caseworkers to do drug and alcohol treatment or some other service, and you short staff and level funded that service, then people who need those services will ultimately slip through the cracks because somehow the priority has just gotten away from us.
Right. Just a second ago, you criticized the governor for signing too many of these no-bid contracts. Other than this $600 million to Deloitte Consulting since 2004, can you give some other examples?
Which contract is that?
Deloitte Consulting.
Deloitte Consulting. That is a contract that that's one of those no-bid contracts. Deloitte has their fingers just about in every facet of the state government, mostly in the Department of Public Welfare, where they claim to deliver computer services that make it easy for the caseworkers within the Department of Public Welfare to determine eligibility, software, to do medical assistance and that kind of thing. But when you talk to the caseworkers who are employed by the taxpayer, they will tell you that, A, these systems don't work, they're inaccurate, and very often, they just crash. They might go down for 2 or 3 hours. And as a result of that, you have increased cases of, overpayments, where if you had people, individual caseworkers, talking to clients face-to-face and verifying the kind of information that's needed, you'd have far fewer errors.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bill Bacon, Legislative Director for the Pennsylvania Social Services Union, PSSU. Their website, SEIU668.org. You can get there from our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. I got to tell you, Bill, Republicans have got to be chomping at the bit. They finally have a reason to butcher services to the poor, butcher services to the aged, and destroy government. Or as Grover Norquist famously said,
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
Do you see this as more assault on government services, Bill?
Yeah, there really is. And I think, what's happened, I think, over time is that, government services, have gotten a bad name by those who, like Grover Norquist, want to, as the ad just said, suggested, is to put it in a bathtub and drown it. But the fact of the matter is people depend on their government, right? And especially in times where, like this, where, we're in what's euphemistically called the Great Recession, there's a need for more services and not less. And what we've seen over the years is a different direction in the priority of people, the policymakers and the people making the laws. Now we understand, let me be very clear about something, Rick. We understand that the people that I represent understand full well the crisis that we're in, the lack of revenue, that kind of thing. We have been through this before. But what we are saying, at a time when people need more services, more people have applied for unemployment compensation, more people are at risk of losing their homes, more people are applying for medical assistance, then you need to support those programs that support the people of the Commonwealth and look for it, look for ways in which, to bring in revenue without the sort of broad-based tax increases that everybody's complaining about. I'm not advocating for an increase in the personal income tax or sales tax, but there's other ways to generate additional revenue. But the bottom line is that I think the policymakers have to keep an eye on what is happening out in the communities and out in their neighborhoods.
I agree with you completely. But I see this as an opportunity for the anti-government crowd to really strangle government even further, because they're so afraid that the average citizen is going to see their government in a positive light, that they're going to get health benefits, that they're going to get unemployment benefits, and the things that safety net that's under all of us. And they're going to, again, look to government as a solution and not what the Republicans have been pointing as the problem.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, and that's why your radio show and radio shows like yours is so very important to get that message out there that you know, I mean, this isn't 1980 any longer. It's government, you know, people, when you ask people honestly, people, when you poll people honestly, people are prepared to pay for a service that they believe is worthwhile. What they aren't prepared to pay is for some of the outrageous things that you've seen occurred with our lawmakers, both at the federal level and the state level, over the last several years. They're not prepared to pay for any scandalous kind of programs or some of the self-serving things that they see happen. They will pay to take care of their grandmother. They will pay to take care of children who can't take care of themselves. And so, you know, I think the pendulum is swinging back to the perspective that, you know, government can do good. It can't do it all, but it can do some good. And I think the reason is that there are people like you who are out there spreading that message.
So let me ask you this. We got about a minute and a half left. What can we do?
What do I do?
What can we do? What can Rick Smith do to help? What can the people do to help?
Well, they can do it. They can do a lot of things. I think that the biggest thing they can do, people need to engage their government. People need to pick up the phone and call their state senator, state representative, and find out what's going on. Find out what's really going on. If they have time, they need to visit that Capitol and talk about the issues that are important to them. And more importantly, they need to tell personal stories of how you know, this recession we're in is affecting a member of their family or somebody they might know. Everybody that I know knows somebody who's lost their health care, who's lost their job, who for no fault of their own now has to apply for food stamps, those kind of things. People just need to get engaged, and I think, you know, people can listen to shows like yours, and of course they can go to our website at SEIU668.org and find out more information.
All right, I got a phone call for you real quick. You can stick around for a second.
Yeah,
we got Norma on line one. How you doing today, Norma?
Hi, how are you?
Good. You got a question for Bill Bacon?
I do. I'd like to know what, if anything, the Democratic Party is doing to help preserve all the services that need to be preserved. I appreciate everything that he's doing, but is the Democratic Party doing anything? Thank you.
All right, thanks, Norma. That's a good question, Bill. Do you know of anything?
Well, yeah, that is a good question. I think the Democrat Party has a platform that puts people first. I mean, it's clear that the election of Barack Obama, that was clear, putting people first was clearly on the minds of the voters, not just in Pennsylvania, but all across the country in that very, very historic election. There are a number of very progressive, like-minded Democrats who work day-to-day here at the state capitol, making sure that, they put people first when they craft these budget priorities.
All right, Bill, the website, SEIU668.org, Bill Bacon, Legislative Director. I appreciate you taking time for us, Bill.
Well, thanks a lot, Rick. Keep up the good work. It's a great program.
We're going to take a break. We're right back after this. 1-877-960-0960. We're right back.
Dick Cheney has apparently been on a magical mystery media tour. He has sought out and been interviewed by more TV journalists and talk show hosts during the past month than during the 8 years he was vice president. Now, the topic is always the same. Torture was done during the Bush-Cheney administration, and it was effective. Persons held at Guantanamo Bay are evil and should never be released. President Obama's actions are a threat to national security. Cheney claims that because of the actions he and George W. Bush took after 9/11, there were no more attacks upon the United States. Here's what he doesn't say. Prior to 9/11, his administration rejected pleas by the FBI to increase funding and manpower for counterterrorism. CIA intelligence reports told the president that al-Qaeda was planning a major attack, probably by air. Following 9/11, the administration carried out a systematic shredding of six constitutional amendments in the mistaken belief that somehow snipping away at America's fabric would protect us from further harm. That although torture was used, contrary to every international law, it did not, according to senior officials of both FBI and CIA, produce valuable intelligence. Another thing that Dick Cheney doesn't say is that according to major independent research polls, only 20 to 22% of Americans now identify themselves as Republicans. Does anyone wonder why four-fifths of Americans don't want to be tainted by the actions done by the Bush-Cheney administration and by the direction that the Republican Party has taken this past year to eliminate any Republican who is not in lockstep with its extreme right-wing agenda? Dick Cheney can spin the truth all he wants, but the reality is that 9/11 occurred on his watch. For the Rick Smith Show, this is Walter Frasch.
Like health care and pensions. It's because of the union movement that we got worker safety laws. Even if you're not a member of a union, you benefited from a union.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-877-960-0960. Tuesday afternoon, Fox News had former Vice President Dick Cheney on. I guess he emerged from his undisclosed location. This time to take another shot at working people. You know, here's the thing. While this guy was in office, we never heard from him. Now we can't get him to shut up. Anyway, the dark one, who, by the way, was a total nightmare for working families, now he's trying to present himself as the expert and the voice of reason on worker rights issues. During his attack on the Employee Free Choice Act, he said, "I carried a ticket for 6 years in the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers in my youth." Before he went on to hit every single anti-labor right-wing talking point. Eddie Vail, spokesman for the AFL-CIO, had a great quote, Jake. He said, quote, "Dick Cheney is as much of an expert at helping America's workers as he is in not shooting people in the face." If Cheney wants to emerge and be the lead spokesman against the Employee Free Choice Act, I'll help book his interviews. Think about that. Dick Cheney is the face of the opposition. I'd be all for that. My next guest is Rick Bloomingdale, Secretary Treasurer of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Rick, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's good to be on again.
I appreciate you stopping on. What do you think about that? Dick Cheney is the face of the opposition?
Well, you know, I heard the quote from, but, you know, he probably knows as much about labor as he knows about finding WMDs. You know, the guy he speaks for himself. You know, Thomas Jefferson used to say, you know, one of the great things about the freedom of speech and freedom of the press is that the people who speak out, folks will soon see what idiots they are if you let them speak. And thank God, you know, nobody's, you know, we all get to hear Dick Cheney directly. And we get to see what an idiot he truly is. So thank goodness for freedom of speech and freedom of the press.
Right. You know, I think unionization just got a big endorsement because if Dick Cheney is against it, it must be a good thing. Now, if we could only get George Bush to come out from hiding and express his disapproval, I think passage would be a slam dunk.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway.
Yeah, if those folks are against you, it's got to be good.
Yeah, but to show where he stands on workers' rights, he said that, this is a quote from the interview, quote, Well, I always felt that Ronald Reagan did, back in 1981, in the early part of his administration, when he was very tough on the air traffic controllers, was a good, sound, solid move. Do you agree that what he did, what Reagan did back in 81 was a good, solid move for working people?
No, that was actually sent a horrible signal. You know, back in the 80s, we used to have fairly good, I mean, every once in a while, you know, you had contentious labor relations, but, you know, unions had some good balanced power, companies had balanced power. Back then when, you know, unions were organizing, there were maybe 6,000 incidences of unfair labor practices and intimidation by the employers against unions. Today, in the last year we have information on, there were 29,000 unfair labor practices of intimidation of employers against employees trying to unionize. So what Ronald Reagan did by firing the air traffic controllers was he sent a signal to business that it is okay to break the law. It is okay to intimidate workers. It's okay to take on unions. It's okay to, instead of sharing the wealth with your workers, try to make them work for as little as possible so you can return as much money to Wall Street and the corrupt leaders there as you can. Now, Reagan, you can trace the beginning of the decline of the middle class back to Ronald Reagan's policies, and that includes his what he did to Patco and the air traffic controllers. Ever since then, we've had this philosophy of trickle-down economics, which has concentrated the wealth in the hands of the few at the expense of our great middle class, which really defined what America was all about.
Right. So the answer to this is going back and undoing the policies of the Reagan administration. And I think one of them, and I've been saying this for the longest time, I think the Employee Free Choice Act should be the centerpiece of Obama's administration as a way to get money back into workers' pockets and to get people spending again.
I think that's right. I mean, this whole idea of, you know, giving people stimulus checks, which the Bush folks did, you know, it's nice to get a check and all that, but you know, I would much rather have the ability to have a level playing field with my boss and sit down with him and go over the books and say, look, you know, okay, we got to give some to the shareholders. They invest, but, you know, we're the ones who make the products or provide the services, so we deserve our fair share as well. And that's what unions do. Unions level the playing field, give workers a voice at the workplace to say, treat us fairly, don't treat us arbitrarily, don't fire us because you don't like the light way we look today. But also, you know, share, we help, you know, we make your business profitable, help us share, you know, let us share in some of those profits. That's always been, that's the way we created the middle class. It wasn't, you know, I was at the Injured Workers Federation event this morning in Bethlehem, and, you know, you had these workers who went to work every day and then they got injured on the job. Now they're struggling just to maintain a decent lifestyle, and workers' comp, of course, is only two-thirds of your wages. They're trying to get well to get back to work. But, it's those kind of, and we brought up the fact that employers, they never gave us safety on the work at the workplace. That had to come about through unions fighting to pass a law like OSHA, where we can have worker committees. I mean, too many companies would just routinely, you know, cause their works, and everybody says, "Oh, employers don't want an unsafe workplace; that's too expensive." And before OSHA, it wasn't. They would just ship you out and say, "Good luck, and go get your workers' comp if you can. We're going to fight you every step of the way." And then they'd hire somebody else to do the job. So this idea that employers want to give people things that they should have, I'm not speaking of all employers. There are good ones out there. But one guy told me of an example, and I don't mean to ramble here, but he had an example where, you know, right before Clinton left office, they had put in an ergonomics work rule in OSHA, which said, you know, this is how to avoid carpal tunnel and back injuries and back stress. Here's how you should have your workplace set up for computer users. Well, this one company, because they thought the regulations were coming along, you know, it cut down on absenteeism. It was helping people stay healthy. They were doing training. As soon as Bush came in, and Secretary Elaine Chao, his anti-labor secretary, she repealed the regulator. They stopped enforcement of the regulation. The company went right back to the way they were doing things before. They didn't go ahead with changing out all the desks and, you know, making sure that people were healthy. And now they have back to their high rates of absenteeism. So, you know, some of these companies, they just don't care. And, you know, it's been unions that have fought for the 8-hour workday, the 40-hour week, fought to get overtime, fought for health and safety rules in the workplace. So we need unions now more than ever, especially in this recession where people are firing, you know, left and right, and regardless of your experience and skills.
Right, and that's why I play the clip that I played at the beginning of this segment, and I play it often, because we finally have a president who understands that it is workers coming together and collectively bargaining that has made working conditions tolerable in this country.
That's exactly right. I mean, President Obama, he really understands what unions have done for America and how they helped build America and how they have to be part of the solution to rebuild the middle class.
Right. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Pennsylvania AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Rick Bloomingdale. Let me ask you this, Rick. Arlen Specter jumped over to the Democratic Party. It appears maybe he's going to be jumping back to supporting the Employee Free Choice Act. He said this week that the prospects are pretty good for a compromise. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'm certainly not at the level where we're doing the negotiations. You know, somebody in D.C. hopefully is at the table, and, you know, they're working all that. You know, regardless of what party Arlen Specter is, you know, Arlen and Senator Specter has been helpful to workers in the past, so I'm not going to discount any of his record. But what's important is if Senator Specter supports workers, then workers are going to support Senator Specter. It's as simple as that. And one of the key things that we see, probably the key thing right now, is support for the Employee Free Choice Act. And, you know, Senator Specter was a supporter in the past. We know he had some problems with the bill as it's currently written. I disagree with what he says was wrong with the bill. You know, he mentioned that there seemed to be intimidation on both sides, and, you know, I've used this fact before. In the, you know, 75 years of the National Labor Relations Act, there have been 42, not 4,200, not 42,000, 42 citations against unions for violating the act. In 1 year alone, against employers, I mentioned 29,000 in 2007. So if there's intimidation and violation of the law, it is clearly on the side of the employer. So I disagree with Senator Specter that there's intimidation on both sides. It's clearly one-sided, but I hope he comes back. So I hope he gets, we make some changes that don't undermine the integrity of the ability to organize, stronger penalties against employers who break the law, and a way to get a first contract, because if we win the elections that we are in, their next step usually is to delay the bargaining of a contract. So we gotta fix those three things, and hopefully Senator Specter will support us, and then workers will take a hard look and we'll support him. I mean,
there are a couple of ideas that are being thrown around. I wanted to get your thoughts real quick. California Senator Dianne Feinstein proposed this mail-in ballot scheme. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I don't know enough about mail-in ballots, whether or not they work or not. The intimidation, it isn't about where you get the ballot. Intimidation happens at the workplace through these captive audience meetings where the employer will bring people in and say, look, if you vote for the union, we're going to have to close the plant down. Now, that's illegal. That's against the law. But what we found with 29,000 violations in 1 year is that employers don't seem to respect the law. And that, you know, to me, that's shocking. As a kid who was brought up by parents who were law-abiding and very much believers in the integrity of laws. You know, we all speed once in a while and break the law that way. But, you know, just this sort of blatant disregard for the law and with the willingness to break it in order to keep a union out, it's to me, it's astounding. And I hope I'm not being too naive. But so with regards to the mail-in ballot, I mean, you're going to have employers say to people, look, you got this ballot at home, you better vote no on the union or we're going to have to move the plant. They're still going to break the law. Hopefully, Senator Fine, I think I read somewhere that her proposal may require that the ballots be sent to the National Labor Relations Board rather than to, well, I guess usually they go to the American Arbitration Association. So they've never gone back to the employer.
Right.
And the intimidation usually doesn't happen on, it does happen on the day of the election, but more of the intimidation happens leading up to the election. The threat to move the plant, the threat to cut wages, the threat to take away pensions, all those things that are illegal. So it really, by mailing the ballot to the House, the employer's certainly going to know that the people got the ballot. So it's really not going to, it's not going to keep the employer from doing intimidation. It may increase participation if it goes to the House. Some unions do mail ballots for their internal elections. So I think mail-in ballots are probably okay, but if her intent is to stop intimidation by doing a mail-in ballot, I really don't think that problem is solved by having a mail-in ballot.
I agree with you. You've got about 30 seconds left. What can I do? What can my listeners do? What can we do to get this thing passed, make sure that this becomes a reality for workers?
Well, I think people need to keep up the phone calls, keep calling your congresspeople, and keep calling Senator Spector and let him know that workers support a level playing field and the right to choose a union and let them decide the method on which they want to choose a union. The National Labor Relations Act currently, without amendment, gives them two ways. They can either do majority sign up. You get over 50% signed cards, you give them to the employer. He says, yes, you got a union. The other way, of course, is to have the election. Which if the employer turns down the cards, then the union petitions for the election, and we usually do an election. And all we're saying is give the choice to the employees, not the boss. The employees ought to have the right to decide how they're going to choose their union.
Amen.
It has to be a majority of the employees, of course.
Amen. That's a good spot to end on. Rick, I appreciate you taking time for us. Rick Bloomingdale, Secretary Treasurer of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, PAAFL-CIO.org is their website. We're right back.
Just one more cup of coffee, take the highway. I'm going to make it to the land. Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down. While the boss man takes his bonus pay, jets on out of town. He's bailing out the bankers as a farmer's auction bell. Yeah, while they're living it up on Wall Street in that New York City town, here in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-877-960-0960. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Occasionally I play songs like that. I'm not a big fan of country music, and here's just one more reason to hate country music. Former Cheers star John Ratzenberger filed for a restraining order this week against his ex-girlfriend because she's scaring him afraid she's going to turn violent after listening to country music. According to TMZ.com, the actor who played Cliff Clavin in the beloved sitcom Cheers filed documents in Los Angeles Superior Court claiming his 45-year-old ex made harassing and intimidating phone calls, emails, and texts to him and his family and friends. And bizarrely enough, Ratzenberger claims his former partner indicated that it is common in many country western songs for women to set the cars of their former boyfriends on fire and is scared she may have the capacity to perpetrate such acts and similar violence conduct. He has requested a restraining order.
Couldn't make that one up, could you?
And I had to talk about that. You just can't make that kind of stuff up. Anyway, what do you got for us today?
No, Kerry, if I can make a comment about that gentleman. By the way, he's a strong advocate for unions. I've seen him on a lot of commercials. Good
he does
man.
A Made in America program.
Yes, yes. Good man, actually. Got some bad news. I'm from the county of Lebanon, and was a longtime political icon that passed away. Ernie Klein, former lieutenant governor under the Milton Schaap administration during the 70s. Ernie started his political career in western Pennsylvania, Beaver Falls, in 1955. Ran for city council. 1965, 10 years later, ran for Senate. Within about 2 years, he impressed enough people that, in fact, he was elected a floor leader at the age of 38. And at that time, that was the youngest age that anyone could had been elected to that position. What I liked about Ernie Klein was, Rick, his whole career, and we can identify this, he fought for the defenseless in our society. He fought for the little guy. He fought for the common man. He fought for the working people. And I loved that about Ernie Klein. He was indeed an icon. And to give you an idea of the values that he instilled in his children, his son, in 95, ran for a Court of Common Pleas judgeship, and the whole family coalesced around that campaign. They came in from all parts of the state, and I have never seen, and I sincerely mean that, I have never seen a campaign that was as effective as that campaign. His son just was a dynamo. He worked night and day. He would go door to door all day. He would come back and make calls. He would make calls, and he would bring in political IOUs. His family worked just as hard. And what is amazing was the fact that he was going against a very powerful political, the most powerful man in the county, a state senator, who later on lost 10 years later. But the point is, it was his wife, the senator's wife, in a county that was 2.5-1 Republican. The Klein family in their campaign just annihilated him, 160-40, which was just a huge margin. And what impressed me, it taught me that Ernie Klein had instilled in his children the concept of working hard, the concept of standing for something, and the concept of making a difference in people's lives. And I have never, ever seen a campaign that was that effective. Ernie Klein, indeed, was a great man. I mean, what better tribute, Rick, than to say the man devoted his life for the concept of making life better for his fellow man. Ernie Klein was a great man, indeed, and he will be missed. And I was sorry to see him go. Some more bad news. GM and Chrysler. Every time you turn around, Rick, they're giving back. Now they're going to have to close dealerships. They announced that GM would close an additional 1,600 dealerships, Chrysler an additional 2,300. On top of that, 470 dealerships will be eliminated when eventually Saab and Hummer and Saturn's outlets are closed. They're also going to be eliminating, on top of all that, an additional 100 standalone dealerships that deal only with Pontiac. GM eventually plans to have about 3,600 left by the end of next year. That would represent an astounding 40% reduction in dealerships. Just more and more sad news. Arlen Specter, he's been getting a lot of pressure from labor. What is encouraging to see, the Jewish religious community and an organization called the Interfaith Justice Group has also been putting pressure on him. There's a group of rabbis and rabbinical students who have come out and said, you know, the concept of worker freedoms goes back over 2,000 years. And it has been with us, and the Jewish faith has always been on the side of workers. The spokespeople for Sojourner Magazine, which is a religious magazine, have come out. The Reverend Jim Wallace, he has said, the right to organize is a moral right. Workers need that, and the context has been very unfair. Intimidation, obstacles, prevention of democracy in the workplace has been a real problem. The bill is trying to correct that imbalance. Joseph Fahey, a Catholic theologian at Mayhem College, has set up, I think, and I think many of us Catholic scholars believe, the Employee Free Choice Act is firmly rooted in Catholic social teaching. There is a rising chorus, and it's great to see, among the religious community, and they're using their moral force to try to persuade Arlen Specter. And I think, given what's happening, we probably are going to need every available force to persuade Arlen Specter, but only time will tell.
Yeah, I think we're going to be able to get him to come around. Anyway, we're going to take a break right here. 1-877-960-0960. We're right back with Eric Loetke, Research Director at Campaign for America's Future. We're right back.
The dirty little secret, Marianne, is that every Republican in this country wants Obama to fail, but none of them have the guts to say so.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-877-960-0960. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Hart Schaffner Marx workers voted unanimously this week to occupy the plant if the company's ongoing bankruptcy proceedings lead to liquidation. Workers United President Ruby Sims asked hundreds of fellow HartMax employees, "Are you with me?" They rose to their feet, packed the cafeteria of the factory to endorse the plan. The workers were joined by our good friend, Representative Phil Hare, and the state treasurer and a number of labor leaders. Hart Schaffner Marx is another in a long line of companies that we were told the reason not to ask any questions about the bailout to the banking industry and to just trust the Bush administration with $600 or $700 billion was for companies like this one. Look, you'll remember me saying back when this debate was going on, I'm for the bailout if and only if the money is used the way they were saying it was to be used. And that was to open up the credit line so that the Hart Schaffner Marxes of the world could keep their doors open and keep employing people who are earning a reasonable wage. We've bailed out the big banks. We've bailed out the big shots. They've kept their gold-plated toilets. What about the workers? I'm going to ask that question to Eric Loetke. He's a research director at Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is the website. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hello there.
Let me ask you this. When do workers get the bailouts? When do people like the workers at Hart Schaffner Marx get a bailout?
There's so many different layers going on. There's the bailout for the banks, which is, you know, this troubled assets relief, which is just like piling money to the banks and hoping that they will do the right thing with it. Then there's the bailout for the auto industry, which is giving them money. And it used to be that it was giving them money and then they would build cars and hire people to build cars and do auto industry stuff. The latest version of the auto industry bailout is that General Motors' plan is to improve their business, is that they're going to shut down their factories in America and reopen factories in Mexico and China, which doesn't seem like so much of a win for American taxpayers, American workers, or the American economy.
Not what I signed up for.
Say that again?
That's not what I signed up for. That's not the reason.
Not what you signed up for. And the irony is, you know how Fiat just took is not taking over, buying this share of Chrysler, the Fiat Chrysler deal.
Right.
One of the reasons that Fiat has that money is because Fiat Corporation is getting money from the Italian government to support them during these hard times. And one of the conditions of the Fiat assistance from the Italian government is that Fiat keep its factories in Italy. That's just a condition. And in the global economy, all of the other countries are looking out for their workers. And the American economy, the American government, is still kind of captive by the multinationals and doing what the bankers want and doing what the moneyed interests want.
You know, I look at this Hart Schaffner Marx story, and I got to tell you, it makes me sick. Because there are, I guess how the story goes. There are supposedly three buyers interested in this company. Two of them want to keep the plant operating. They even want to modernize the plant. The third just wants to sell it off for a quick buck, sell off the assets, produce the product in China. with the same name. And Wells Fargo, who took billions of our dollars in bailout money, is pushing for the liquidator just so they can turn a quick buck. This isn't how the TARP money was sold to me, and I'm sure it's not how you remember it being sold.
I'm sorry to say I'm having a hard time hearing you. There's a lot of breaking up going on. Ask me the last sentence, the exact question again.
I'm sure this isn't how it was sold to you as well. I mean, you've got this company who's just looking for a quick profit. All they want is a quick buck in their pocket. They're going to liquidate this company. These American jobs are gone. They're going to produce the product somewhere else and use the same brand name. And, you know, this isn't how it was sold to me.
This is not the way it's supposed to be. We have all of these perversions of capitalism going on where, you know, the capitalism that we grew up with involves successes and it involves risks. And if the company doesn't do well, people will lose their jobs, including the executives of the company. And so they want the company to do well. It's not working out that way these days. The bank bailout is, I think, the biggest perversion of all, where we are giving all of this money to the bank, and they are continuing in their bad ways, where they are getting their bonuses and all the rest of it. My favorite new thing is this quote by Dick Durbin. He's a Democratic senator, and what he said is true, and it's amazing that he said it. He says, this is the quote, the bank. Hard to believe in a time when we're facing a banking crisis that many of the banks created are still the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill. That's what Dick Durbin said. Durbin said, concluding with, quote, frankly, they own the place. So Dick Durbin, the Senate Majority Whip, says the banks own the place, and that's what's going on. The banks are calling the shots.
Well, how do we change that?
What's that?
How do we change that?
How do we change that? Now, I want to talk about Barack Obama for 1 minute. The Obama administration is doing a lot of good things, and we totally want to give them some credit. The recovery bill, the stimulus bill, you know, a couple of $100 billion of money that will get its way to the infrastructure, will get its way to the schools and the roads and all the rest of it, and that was good. And the efforts to do health care reform, there's a lot of good stuff going on, and the place where they really are fumbling is the bank bailout. And so there's a couple of things that are needed. One thing that we need, like right this minute, is for things to be transparent, for things to be public. We gave all of this money to the Troubled Assets Relief Program, and the money is going to the banks. Who's getting it? Who is getting the money? Demand an answer. We need public investigations. People talk about a commission, a financial product safety commission. We talk about the COPS, the COPS program. It's an oversight board for the bank. So with subpoena power, with the ability to demand documents and get answers, who is getting this money? That's what we need. So if we're looking for what can the upset public do, what the upset public can do is they can say, we demand disclosure. We want to know who's getting our money and what they're doing with it.
So we shouldn't have teabag parties. That's not the answer.
What's that?
The teabag parties are not the answer.
Teabag parties are ridiculous. Teabag parties were financed by the moneyed interest. And it's funny, you go look at the teabag parties, I forget what their webpage is, you know, teabags.com, you know, something like that, Google it up. And if you look at what are their recommendation is to cut the estate tax. Like, that's what they wanted to do. The people who financed those teabag parties, those tea parties, what they wanted to do was things like cut the estate tax for people who, so people could pass more than $7 million tax-free, which is just not the problem with the American economy, certainly not right now and certainly not when grandma finally dies, that not enough people are able to pass not enough millions of dollars to their heirs tax-free.
Right.
The tea parties were silly. What's going on is that we need transparency in this process. We need to know who's taking the money and what they're doing with it.
Right. The reason I bring up the teabaggers, quite simply, is that there's anger out there. People are angry. We're spending billions of dollars, and people are upset. And these parties give them a misguided place to put their anger.
That is exactly right. And the people are right to be angry because there is something gone wrong. And they voted for change, and they're getting change. It's moving in this direction, but we're moving, you know, we're turning a super freighter. It's going to take some time, and it's hard to tell people who are angry to be patient, but at the same time, the anger needs to be directed towards the heart of the problem, which is the bankers and the bank control of the industry and the wealthy people who are just having their way, and the Tea Parties are not what we need.
Over at ourfuture.org, you wrote a piece. You can get there from our website at thericksmithshow.com. You wrote a piece on budget deficits, which I thought was a very good piece in explaining that the money that we're spending right now is not being wasted. As long as it's being spent on long-term investment, infrastructure changes, public transportation, things like that. Can you talk a little bit about your piece?
One of the scare buttons that's being pushed is deficit, because we all want to be fiscally responsible, and we want to avoid deficits, and we should be. This is true. But part of fiscal responsibility is sometimes borrowing. If you're racking up credit card debt to buy a plasma TV, maybe that's not good. If you're borrowing money to go to college, maybe that's a good long-range investment. And the way it works with the government is there are sometimes needs for short-term spending, and you'll pay for it over time because you're investing in economic growth over time. The interstate highways, the transcontinental railroads, land-grant universities, they cost money when they were built. What's going on right now is that we need the government to step into the economy because the private sector has stumbled. And so the consumers aren't buying. We don't have consumer-driven growth. We don't have private commercial buying investment because there's no credit available. And people need to work. The government can step in. And at this moment, this is a time for the government to spend money putting people to work, building the roads, building the schools, laying the railroad lines, building the infrastructure that will bring us long-range investment. We need to borrow money to do it, and that's okay. That's like borrowing money to go to college or buy a house. That's not fiscally irresponsible. Our deficits are manageable. They are high. They're not as high as they were during World War II. They're not as high as they were in the years after World War II. They're not as high as they are in a lot of the other G20 countries. Our deficits are manageable. We need to have our eyes open. We can't borrow forever. But this is the time for us to be spending money. And some years from now, we can worry about exactly what the balances are. Right now, we need to use the money. We need to put people to work. And it's okay to borrow to do that.
Let me ask you a last question. Got about a minute left. In your opinion, we're moving in the right direction with the Obama administration.
We are moving in the right direction. We are, and they're right that they need to do many things at once. We need to rebuild the infrastructure. We need to work on the health care. We need the renewable energy. We need the education. We need to spend some money to get it done. And that's not irresponsible. That is the height of responsible long range government. We need to move on all of these fronts, and the only thing that we need to do a little better is we need to know what's happening with the bank bailout money.
We need
to give some money to General Motors with conditions that says you're putting American people to work in America.
I wish that were the case. Eric Loki from the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org is the website. Eric, thanks so much for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
We're right back, 1-877-960-0960.
He was working in a moment, sweating in his summer heat on the floor.
To the Rick Smith Show. 1-877-960-0960. Remember, check out the website, at thericksmithshow.com. You know, I want to talk about this Hart Max fight, this Hart Schaffner Marks deal that's going on. It just got me flipping mad. Here's pretty much the crux of this story. This company's been making suits in this country for going on close to 90 years. Almost 100 years from what I understand. They've been making suits in this country. And, you know, like any of the textile industry, they've been struggling because every other company's been outsourced. But they make such high-quality suits that they need more skilled craftsmen. And the people who make these suits, very skilled in their trade. But the company, you know, because of the economy, here again, it's the economy. On tough times. You know, people can't afford $1,000 suits anymore. Maybe President Obama can afford to get a tuxedo from them and some suits from them because he is one of their biggest biggest wearers. They were taken over by Wells Fargo. $25 billion we gave Wells Fargo. And the idea, the way it was sold to me, Jake, and help me if I'm wrong here, the way this whole TARP thing was sold to me is we're going to give this money to the banks who are going to open up the credit lines to people like Hart Schaffner Marks so that they can stay in business, they can keep producing their product, they can keep employing people who will then turn around and buy other people's products. This is how it was sold to us. But what's happening is these banks, they've taken that money and they've gone, hey, windfall. We got some profit now. You thought we were greedy before. Just wait till you give me that $700 billion. So what are they doing? They're selling these companies off. More of this nonsense going on. They're going to break this company up. They're going to sell it off. And they're going to produce that product somewhere else overseas. Is that right? Is that what we signed up for? Is that the reason we gave $700 billion to the banks? I don't think so. That money was supposed to keep jobs in this country. And, you know, you look at this cash for clunkers thing that's going on. It's now hit a speed bump. I would love to see them put a Buy American provision into that as well. Why can't we do what the rest of the world is doing? Protecting our industry. Protecting ourselves. Doesn't make any sense. And this Hart Schaffner Marks thing has just gotten me just flipping mad. Because this is a perfect example of where that money could have been better used. There are two companies willing to buy this company and produce that product right here, modernize their plants. And that's been a huge problem in this country. We have not had companies investing here. It's the reason that GM and Chrysler are moving overseas, because that's where they built their new plants. GM has been building a $3 billion production facility in China for the last 5 years. Because they knew they were going to produce their cars there. They've been doing it for 5 years. That's where they invested. They haven't retooled in this country in years. They haven't modernized in this country in years. And shame on them. And shame on us for letting them do it.
You're exactly right, Rick. The shame of it is the very people whose tax dollars have helped save that company, their jobs are going to go overseas. Again, it just defies logic what we allow to happen in this country. And again, we allow that money to leave Washington without proper safeguards. But you would think, and again, I think even you and I, as cynical as we are to the system, we just assumed that they would do what was right. I guess we assume too much. Shame on us.
No, I got to tell you, I didn't assume that the companies would do the right thing for us. I knew that the companies would act in their own best interest. I knew they were going to act for themselves first. I thought our politicians, I thought our policymakers would have half a brain in their heads. But then again, this was the Bush administration after all. I thought that they would have some, just a very mild bit of oversight to find out where that money was going. I was wrong. You know, you would think that the policymakers during the Bush years would have had some, I don't know, some thought of, hey, where's this money going to go? Is it going to benefit us? Are we going to get it back? Or I guess maybe shame on me for thinking that someone in the Bush administration would give a damn about you and me. Shame on me.
No, I disagree a little bit. I think you would think that they would want to abide by the spirit of that agreement. The spirit was to save them, to enhance the economy. Common sense dictates you enhance the economy by putting money back into our economy. Simple concept.
Well, they did that. They handed out checks for $300 and $600 so we could buy cheaply made Chinese products at Walmart. Problem solved. Isn't that what they did? And then you got people saying, well, you know, George Bush gave me $600. No other politician's given me any money. But, they, you know, most people didn't realize, duh, it didn't help our economy any. It just for a couple of days allowed you to go out and consume more and got you hooked on spending a little bit more. Got you pulling that credit card out of the wallet a couple times more. Frustrated. Go ahead. You got a couple of things you
want
to
do. Well, I just want to make a comment quickly. I mean, on that subject that we were just talking about. I mean, we're talking about our disastrous free trade policies. Since NAFTA has been instituted, we've had a trade deficit of $6.5 trillion. $6.5 trillion and growing on a daily basis. When are we going to learn? I mean, when is enough? When are we going to stop allowing corporate America to gouge us? Not only the taxpayers, but the future of this country and steal the future of this country. When? And you and I both thought when the Obama administration came that, you know, there's a good chance that we're going to stop this.
You know, let me ask you this. Is it that it's so big that he can't change it? I mean, if you think about it, I mean, if he were to do everything all at once, and do the things that we want him to do, would those money and interest say, you know what, back with it, we're going to take our ball and go home? And things would completely collapse. Do you think at some level he's got to at least throw them a bone? I'm not making excuses, but I'm trying to figure this out.
What you're saying is he has to be practical. I understand that. But at the end of the day, there has to be change, Rick. And that's going to be tough. These people are powerful vested interests.
Well, look what they're doing with a very minor change in the labor law. I mean, the Employee Free Choice Act is such a minor, minor change. But look at how much money and effort they've put into fighting just a very little change.
And they were so effective that you actually had working people say, I oppose that. But yet, it was the most important labor law change in 70 years, which would quantifiably increase the strength of unions, and by doing that, increase the ability of working people to procure their fair share of the economic pie. But yet, people that you and I worked with said, well, what are you guys trying to do? Take away our secret ballot. And you got away with it. And it was, you and I both know, it was an outright fraudulent lie. But they got away with it.
Well, I mean, we talked to people who never didn't read the bill, couldn't tell you anything about it. Yet they were experts on it. Oh, it's going to steal my secret ballot. Explain to me where it is. Show me this.
Local talk show hosts all the way up to and including Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity on a daily basis. Pound, 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 pound. They sure didn't allow the truth to get in their way, did they? And then we wonder why. Anyway, that's a little bit beside the point. Some good developments, Rick. There are some good things happening in this country. We all know about FMLA, which allows for uncompensated leave as it refers to sickness, but it is a limited in scope. We are trying throughout the country in many areas of trying to go to the next level, which is paid sick leave. There are now sick leave programs being pushed in about 14 states. In 2006, San Francisco became the first locale in the nation to guarantee paid sick leave. In 2008, Washington, D.C., and Milwaukee, Wisconsin passed sick day standards. In addition to, and this is kind of unique, they offered paid safe days for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault and stalking. There's been a bill in the Senate in Massachusetts, a good bill, and this is what it does. It would cover all employees. If an employee works for an employer who has a better program, that employer will be allowed to keep that program as insofar as paid.
You're setting a floor here.
Right, exactly. Employees may earn up to 7 paid sick days per year at a rate of about 1 hour for every 30 hours. And employees may use it intermittently and on a reduced work schedule. It allows users for illness, injury, and health conditions that require staying home. it's the next step. It's good to see. It's certainly needed. In fact, the truth is, and you and I know this to be true, Rick, that for decades, quite a few European countries have had paid sick leave, and to the benefit of their workers, and it makes for a happier workforce.
Well, you know, I hear my crazy religious friends saying, well, we need to get people having children. Well, a good way to start that would be some paid family leave for when they have a child. We're going to take a break. We're right back. 1-877-960-0960.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
But you're still f***ing presence as far as I can see.
Standing in the shadow of Pudge Peak, the town of Cripple Creek, Colorado, was thriving in the late 1800s. With a population of nearly 15,000, Cripple Creek was the second largest to win in the entire state. Standing in the shadow of Pudge Peak, the town of Cripple Creek, Colorado, was thriving in the late 1800s. With a population of nearly 15,000, Cripple Creek was the second largest town in the entire state of Colorado, largely due to the 150 mines in operation within its town limits. With silver prices sinking and coal prices soaring due to the Federal Reserve's call to replenish their supply, hundreds of silver miners flooded Cripple Creek in search of work in the now vital gold mines. This mass influx of mining allowed the most prominent local mine owners, J.J. Hagerman, David Moffitt, and Eben Smith, to demand a 10-hour workday with no increase in each miner's $3 per day wage. Fueled on by longer days and increasingly pointless bargaining with mine owners, local miners' union, the Free Coinage Union, joined up with the Western Federation of Miners to begin striking on February 7, 1894, in the hopes of regaining their former 8-hour workday and their same $3 wage. The strike had almost immediate effects across the state as smelters were forced to close, mines were operating at a diminished capacity, and mine owners were losing money by the day. Something was about to give. What followed the first few days of the miner strike was a series of chaotic events between the miners' union and the miner owners' private armies. Numerous fistfights, gun battles, prisoner exchanges, and destruction of mine facilities took place between the two sides as they each struggled to break the other side's will. This back-and-forth violence would go on for nearly 4 months. Having seen enough of the chaos, Colorado Governor Davis Waite stepped in on May 27, 1894 and issued a proclamation intended to end the strike and its accompanying chaos. Governor Waite sent the Colorado State Militia to Cripple Creek on two occasions to quell violence between the two sides as he negotiated on behalf of the miners' union. The negotiations between Governor Waite and the mine owners finally struck gold on June 2, 1894, with the mine owners agreeing to reinstate the 8-hour workday along with the miners' original $3 per day wage. In addition, the mine owners agreed not to retaliate against any of the miners who actively participated in the strike. The success of the Western Federation of Miners in bargaining with local mine owners allowed its influence to grow in the Cripple Creek region for the next decade. The union became a political power in county government as well as a source of empowerment for local workers. The Western Federation of Miners was successful in organizing most local trade workers into one of its 54 local unions. Perhaps most notable of this entire affair is that the miner strike at Cripple Creek remains the only time in American history that a state militia was called out in support of striking workers. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IU Patriot. For more information, visit www.RickSmithShow.com.
Yes, our conservative alert. Earlier this month, the British government announced a list of people barred from entering the country because of their history of fostering extremism or hatred. Included on the list was American hate radio host Michael Savage, who has since expressed his outrage at the decision, and he has turned to his good friend, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, for help. The San Francisco Chronicle reports that lawyers for Savage are formally asking Hillary to call on the British government to withdraw its ban. It's interesting, since Savage has really, over the years, not been the nicest person in the world to Hillary. Said that she's the most godless woman in the Senate. Regarding one of her speeches, he said, "That's rubbish. That's Hitler dialogue. Goebbels would be proud of you, Hillary Clinton. I know Mao Zedong would have been proud of you." He went on to say, again said, "Clinton has destroyed the war effort against terror, and if, God forbid, a suitcase bomb goes off, we'll know who to blame." And Clinton's run for the presidency, he said, she would stir up a race war, a civil war in the country to get that hag elected. He even once said that Hillary had something to do with the death of John Kennedy so that she could run for U.S. Senate. And also in our crazy conservative alert, even crazy sees crazy in this one. Texas Republican Senator John Cronin rejected Texas Republican Representative Pete Sessions' statement that the Obama administration intended to diminish employment and diminish stock prices as part of a divide-and-conquer strategy to consolidate power, adding that the Obama agenda was intended to inflict damage and hardship on free enterprise and to kill the free enterprise system. Cronin, the not-so-crazy Texas Republican, said, "I don't know where he's coming from. I'd like to see some sort of clarification on what he means." Cornyn explicitly rejected the idea that Obama wants higher unemployment, lower stock prices, and general economic malaise, saying it's absolutely not true. Also in the conservative alert, must be something with the name. Alabama Republican Senator Jeff Sessions defended the detention of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay military facility, calling it a logical site, saying they wouldn't be treated any better in the United States and they wouldn't have the tropical breeze blowing through. As you know, conservatives have consistently tried to claim that the Guantanamo Bay Country Club is just that, a wonderful place to stay, even though former detainee Mustafa Adir has said of his time there, "For almost 7 years, I was at the end of the world, at the worst place in the world. It would have been hard if I had done something wrong, but it was much harder since I was totally innocent." But, you know, as the Republicans will tell you, hey, it's Club Med. And every once in a while, you get a cool splash of water in your face to help wake you up in the morning. Also in our conservative alert, typical Republican mouthpiece, Mary Matlin, this week. Evidently, it's all Obama's fault that Cheney has attacked him. This week in the Washington Post, a front page article about how many Republicans are uncomfortable with the vice president returning to the spotlight. The Post writes, "Cheney continues to be a force among many members of our base. And while he is entirely unhelpful, no one has the standing to show him to the door," according to a GOP strategist. One person who did come to his name, of course, was Mary Matlin, who said, quote, "If Barack Obama had come in and done what he said he was going to do, and look at stuff and see what is working, then Cheney would have continued to do what he was doing, working on his memoirs, finishing his house. He's got a good life. He's got stuff going on. He didn't care about being on TV. There's no more politics there. He was not settling any scores. He just wants people to understand." And I guess understand we will. I understand he's afraid of going to jail. That's why he's coming out. I understand he's afraid of, oh, we might find out all of the things Darth Cheney did during his years in the White House. And finally, in our conservative alert, and it doesn't get any crazier than this, in a hearing on detainee interrogation, South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham defended the Bush administration's torture program, saying, quote, "The vice president is suggesting there was good information obtained, and I'd like the committee to get that information. Let's have both sides of the story." And this is the beautiful part. And I mean, one of the reasons these techniques have survived for about 500 more years is they apparently work. Do you hear that? His rationale for torturing people is that it's been around for 500 years, and since it's been around for 500 years, it must work. Former FBI interrogator Ali Safarian responded, quote, "Because, sir, there's a lot of people who don't know how to interrogate, and it's easier to hit someone than to outsmart them." And the truth of the matter is, with when it comes to Graham, I don't even know where to begin with that kind of ignorance, Jake. I mean, I really don't. How do you even begin to respond to that kind of ignorance?
Where do you get that information that it works?
Because I believe. Touch hands. Let's touch hands. I can feel it. Thank you. I believe. That's all he has to
do. True believer.
He is. I know.
You know, Al Gore made a comment about the vice president. He said, you know, when they lost, and he said he waited 2.5 years out of deference and respect to the Bush administration before he criticized them in any way. Apparently, Vice President Cheney doesn't have that same respect for our system, does he? You're right about him. When his comments about torture, it's all aimed at putting him in a good light. You're exactly right on that issue, Rick.
Oh, because you got to understand. Here's reality, folks. If we open up an investigation and we find out what really went on, old Darth Cheney's going to find himself in a very dark place, even darker than where he's at in his undisclosed location. And no guns to shoot people in the face with. He's going to be a guest of the state. So he doesn't have to worry about it. He can write his memoirs from prison. You know, I don't even want to go
Isn't
there.
Isn't it amazing? The same people who thought it was important that we impeach a president because he lied about sex outside of marriage are the same people who say, well, we shouldn't be doing this. That's just not good for the country. Isn't it amazing, right?
It's one of those things, Jake. Where, you know, you talk about the passions of the people. And, you know, the House of Representatives is the place for the passions of the people.
It's a people's house.
And I don't remember the people being all that passionate about Clinton being impeached. In fact, about 45% of the people were in favor of even looking at impeachment. The majority of people were against the impeachment process. It was the Republicans who did this on their own accord. And they end up paying for it ultimately. Because they did begin to move towards being this crazy, insane, radical party. I mean, really, Republicans, please take your party back. You've got some crazy people running it. Mm-hmm. You have got some. I mean, when Arlen Specter, who's been a Republican forever, says, you know what? These people are crazy. I've got to leave. I'm going to become a Democrat. You know something's wrong. You know there's a problem there. You know, when the Lindsey Grahams and the Sessions and the Cornyns and all of these crazy Southern Republicans are the face of the party, you know you got a problem.
I remember a local congressman by the name of George Geekus, who was just, I mean, he loved it. I mean, his head was so big, it was amazing how he could get through the door going into the Capitol. And for a solid year, and here's the sad part for America, for a solid year, their concentration was on impeaching Bill Clinton instead of addressing the very real issues of our country.
And the very real issue at the time was Osama bin Laden. You know, I blame Republicans in the House back during the Clinton years more than I blame George Bush for 9/11. Because we should have been on that from day one. But what did we do? Let's play political games. You know, who cares what Clinton did in the privacy of his own office. I don't care.
I agree.
Frustrating. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, you talk about the conservatives. Well, it just so happens that John McCain's mother was on a national talk show, and the subject of Rush Limbaugh came up. And this is what she said. She said, I don't know what the man means. I don't know what he's talking about. He does not represent the Republican Party that I belong to. On the party chairman, Michael Steele, I think that the chairman of the Republican Party, Mr. Steele, was right when he criticized Rush Limbaugh. He was right. Unfortunately, he was made to back off. She again reflects, I think, which is more and more a growing chorus of moderate Republicans who are saying, look, this party is turning into something that I can't relate to. And if the conservatives don't listen, and I hope they do for the sake of the nation, But part of me says, hey, you know, if you guys don't want to change, then you deserve to go into oblivion.
Well, and here's the other part of this. The Republicans really don't need a resurgence because the Democrats, they're so divided. We could have one-party rule in this country and still have division within that one party. I mean, just look at the current state of the party. We're going to take a break. 1-877-960-0960. We're right back.
$10 richer and 20 in debt. You can have anything if you can pray. Don't miss your due date or we'll take it away. Credit, credit, credit card. You can have anything with your MasterCard. Buy now, pay later, do it today. You can make payments, I'll just take it away.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-877-960-0960. If you've got something on your mind, got a couple minutes left here. Despite complaints that banks and credit card companies are gouging their customers by charging outrageous interest rates, the Senate on Wednesday easily turned back an effort to cap interest rates at 15%. The effort by our good friend Bernie Sanders, Senator from Vermont, drew only 33 votes of these 60 needed, with a 60 votes against. Yeah, what do you say? How do you defeat that kind of overwhelming support for the banking industry? I mean, capping usury rates at 15% may be a little low, but not much. I mean, when we're starting to see, we're seeing rates 25-30%. They're talking about one of the loans I saw from one of the these check cashing places going the hundreds of percent. And yet we can't seem, this is what I talk about, the Democratic Party, they're all over the map. You've got these conservative Democrats from areas like this who, for one reason or another, they're just Republican light. Kind of makes you wonder. Jesse Ventura was in the news. Here's the thing. One of the most repeated lines that we get from conservatives in this debate over interrogation is that waterboarding is not torture. We hear this all the time. It's not torture because it's performed on our troops. We do it to our troops all the time. It's part of their training. Well, this week on CNN's Larry King Live, former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura, a former Navy SEAL who has been waterboarded, poured a little cold water on this talking point, saying that waterboarding is, in fact, drowning. And Jura said that he could waterboard Vice President Dick Cheney and get him to admit just about anything. He said that I could get him to confess to Sharon Tate's murders. And it's been 25 days since Mr. Big Mouth Sean Hannity said that he would be waterboarded for charity. And I think Jesse Ventura would be a great person to waterboard him. I'd throw him a donation.
And by the way, he was a former Navy SEAL. Tough guy.
I think I just said that.
Oh, he did? Okay, I'm sorry. He is not the kind of guy who would be easily intimidated. And if he says it's torture, you can bet it is.
You know, but hey, it's just a little slap in the little water in the face. Which brings me to the next story that, we talked about this for the last couple of weeks. That the evangelical leaders, these white evangelical Christians, have come out 62% in favor of using torture because they all have this ticking clock. You know, Jack Bauer is going to be there. And, never mind the golden rule, but, Jesus would torture under those circumstances. And Gary Bauer, I'm sure you remember him, a former Republican presidential candidate. He's affiliated with a number of these right-wing Christian groups. He said that the discussion would not come down to who would Jesus torture. He says, quote, there's a lot of things Jesus wouldn't do because he's the Son of God. I can't imagine Jesus being a Marine or a policeman or a bank president, for that matter. The more appropriate question is, what is a follower of Jesus permitted to do? And you just got to love how they spin that question.
It's called nuance.
Yeah, and they always go right back to that ticking bomb scenario. There's a bomb somewhere. There are 1,000 people going to die. And we have someone who we believe knows exactly where it is. Let's torture. That happens, like, almost never. But Gary Bauer says, you know, it's completely within our religious faith to torture those people. Because Jesus would want to save lives. Seems kind of silly to me. And I guess, you know, I look at someone like him. And this is why I don't profess my faith on this program. I don't talk about my religious values on this program because there are too many people out there doing that. But what I do like to point out is the fact that those who are out here talking about their values the most are the ones who seem to have the craziest values. That torture is okay. Killing people is okay. I just wish that they would stop. People like Bauer, people like the Christian right. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Anyway, today on the program, I want to thank Bill Bacon, legislative director from PSSU, the Pennsylvania Social Services Union, their website, SEIU668.org. Interesting conversation on the budget, Jake. And, you know, going back to that, budgets are about priorities. And one of the things that bothers me is, you know, you make cut with one hand, and it ends up costing you more on the other hand. You know, when we cut services to seniors, when we cut services in education, those costs end up somewhere else. And they end up somewhere else, usually costing us a lot more in the long run. And the other part of this, Jake, is privatization is not the answer. You know, a moderately paid bureaucrat working for the government can do a job just as well as a highly paid private contractor. These no-bid contracts, they don't benefit anyone except the big muckety-mucks who've gotten them. It usually doesn't benefit the workers on either side. It's just another way of extracting tax dollars out of you and I to enrich the very wealthy.
And you can bet that has been suggested during this crisis. You can bet on that because historically, especially the Republicans, have done that in hard economic times. They're saying, well, you know, if we privatize this service, you could save X number of dollars.
Well, that's why what I brought up with Bill Bacon. I said, look, isn't this just an opportunity for those Republicans who have been chomping at the bit to destroy social services, giving them the reason to do just that, to go after them with the knives a-blazing? And, yeah, a lot of it has to do with that.
But, of course, those same people don't really want to examine closely the tax breaks we've been giving to corporate entities in this state. And that's all, again, we talk about on a national level. A lot of the Republicans, especially in the state Senate, you know, that's their panacea, more tax breaks, especially for the corporate interests.
And, you know, if average everyday working people looked at the tax codes, because, you know, none of us like paying taxes, but we do need to pay for the services that we enjoy. But if they looked at it, you'd realize that these big multinationals, they don't pay anywhere near the taxes that you and I pay. You know, when Warren Buffett did his little survey, said he paid 17% tax, when his secretary pays 31% of her income in tax, there's a serious problem there. Also on the program today, we had Rick Bloomingdale, Secretary Treasurer of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. AFL-CIO.org is their website, talking a little bit about the Employee Free Choice Act. Again, you know, personally, and to their credit, both Biden and Obama came out this week and said, you know what, we're going to try and push this through. Now is the time. Obama admitted we don't have the votes yet, but they're working on it. I think by the end of the summer we're going to see something, and that's a good thing because it's got to be that centerpiece of that pie. It's got to be the centerpiece of his recovery package. Also, Eric Loetke from the Campaign for America's Future was here. OurFuture.org. He thinks we're moving in the right direction. We just need some bank oversight. I would have liked to seen a lot of bank oversight. And I again, if there's an industrious senator out there who wants to make a name for himself, figure out a way of setting up a commission to investigate where this TARP money went.
Disgrace.
An absolute disgrace. Anyway, remember, check out our website at therickssmithshow.com. Lots there for you to see and do. And, you know, get involved with the program. You can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. We're always looking for research assistance, people to help us out, to talk about stories that are important, to let us know what's going on out there.
If before we go off the air, Rick, if I can, don't stop communicating with Senator Spector. Keep faxing him, keep calling him, keep emailing him. I think you might be effective. I still think that if enough people put enough pressure on him, we can change him around. What we come up with in the Employee Free Choice Act, I'm not sure, but don't quit. There is a chance we can still change him.
Well, I mean, he's gone from being completely against it to saying, well, prospects are pretty good for a compromise. So I think he understands. There's no way he wins a Democratic primary. There's no way he wins a Democratic primary without being able to say he supported and voted for this bill. There's just no way. It's not possible. Anyway, keep up the fight. We'll see you tomorrow, noon to 2, every Saturday and Sunday right here, noon to 2. Check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. We'll see you tomorrow.
Celebrating 60 years of serving Central Pennsylvania, this is Nice 960 WHYL, Carlisle, Harrisburg, where the great songs have gone.
The following is a paid advertisement by Purity Products. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Oh, there's no hurry. Tonight he'll be at Rick's. Everybody comes to Rick's.
I've already heard about this cafe and also about Mr. Rick himself.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine. Was that your plan?
Oh, just a little something on my own.
Oh, stop it. You know what I want to hear.
No, I don't.
You played it for her, you play it for me.
Well, I don't think I can remember.
If she can stand it, I can. Play it.
Howdy there, and welcome to Rick's Place. We are open and ready. Here's the proprietor of Rick's and Horn's psychotherapist, Rick Goodner.
Hello, Rangers. This is Rick Goodner. You're at Rick's Place here at Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. The week has been spinning again, and the politicians have been spinning again, and the Republicans are spinning in their grave. Even that weasel, Joe the Plunger, left the Republican Party. One of my doctor friends actually made a mistake when he was talking about Spector yesterday, leaving the Republican Party, and said, my party's made a few mistakes. And then he catches himself, because all the time he calls himself a libertarian. And I've always said that libertarians are just Republicans, and he is. So, everybody's spinning, including the people who vote for him. So, that be as it may. This has been a really tough time for me, because I have been fighting with myself for quite a long time, trying to decide whether I was going to make public to say what I think is really going on. I have been hesitant because I'm afraid that if I say what's really going on, someone's going to hear it and it's going to stop, because I want it to continue. But then I was thinking about it last night and I went, Rick, you narcissistic bastard. No one's listening to you. Don't worry about it. Go ahead and say it. At least it'll be on the record. And, you know, I kind of like putting my views out, mainly because later I can come back and say, told you so. I learned that from my mother. Told you so. Gets me in a lot of trouble, though. A friend of mine was talking to me the other day, and I mentioned something about, well, she was actually talking about something that was going on with Obama. And I said, well, if you remember, 2 months ago on my show, I said the same thing. I said, this is what Obama's doing, and now it's coming to fruition. You see it too. You know what the response was? Go talk to your Republican friends. If you want to just bash Obama, go talk to your Republican friends. Whoa. I had to think about that for a second. You know, if you make a statement of what you believe the road's leading to, and it doesn't jive with somebody else's political ideas, does that mean you're bashing somebody? I'm very reflective. I did stop and think about that to see if maybe I was bashing Obama. I wasn't. I just stated 2 months ago about what I thought he was doing, and now it's coming to fruition. And now when I say, told you so, I'm bashing Obama and I should shut up. That kind of scares me, guys. For this reason, Mr. Obama's a very charismatic gentleman. And that's because he will throw out beautiful thoughts, beautiful ideas. And then I'm guilty of it myself, will take our own personal feelings about a certain subject and project that upon Obama. I think I saw a sci-fi flick once where you had these blanks, these people. They were people in everything except form, face, mind, actions, moods. And then those things were added later by taking it away from somebody else. Projection works like that. When you project your kindness, your goodness, your hopes and your fears on another person, that doesn't make that person that. It makes your perception of that person that. In psychology, we have a word for it. It's called projection, one word that we use. The other one is transference. But transference usually means you're transferring another person's identity on another person. Projection is where you're projecting your identity on a person. There's another word for it. It's called drinking the Kool-Aid, where you believe everything that's said and then project your own hopes, dreams, fears, whatever, on the other person. And that's what my friend did. And so when I was pointing out the fact that I was correct on something I said 2 months ago, she was offended, because it wasn't just me saying Obama's not a god, guys. He's a person just like the rest of us. A good person, yes. One who's really trying, yes. But he's not a god. So basically, when that information went to my friend, she got insulted because she felt that it was a personal attack on her. To better understand that, think back to all the right-wingers and everything that they had with Bush. Bush was a perfect blank screen, a blank person. And everybody that voted for him and liked him projected their own thoughts and feelings on Bush. Well, that blank was flawed. Bush has always been flawed. And Obama's not perfect. We've got to watch and make sure we're not projecting ourselves on another person, because we can make them much better than what they are. And any attack on them becomes a personal attack on ourselves. With that said, I'll get into a few things, and one of it is predictions and analysis of what I believe is going on today. Do you remember a little over 100 days ago when the Democratic Party took the House and Senate and the White House? And at that point, the petroleum companies panicked, and they lowered their prices down from $4 a gallon to $1.40 a gallon. And I watched the trend from there. And I said at that time, gas prices are going to go back up because Obama did not keep his word and did not put a windfall profit tax on the petroleum companies. Do you remember that? Have you seen the gas pumps lately? Here's what I believe is going to happen. And I said it at that time. Obama's going to let the gas get to about $2.50 a gallon. I believe for a couple of reasons. Number one, petroleum companies have a lot of money to invest on people who are running for office. And if a windfall profit tax goes on them, not only are they not going to give Obama money, but they're going to give the money to someone who's going to come out against Obama. So Obama's protecting Obama, not the American people. Because, like Spectre, he wants to be reelected. And that, my friends, is the number one issue. He wants to be reelected. Now, it's not out of pure narcissism for him. It's not out of pure, I'm going to get something out of this for him. He really and truly believes that he can help America and that he needs to be in office to help America, and that's probably true. But it also means that he believes that the end justifies the mean. As I said a few months ago, gasoline prices are going to get up to about $2.50, right about there, and then rumbling's going to start again in the White House, in Congress, about a windfall profit tax. At that time, it'll probably stick there. You're being overcharged at least a dollar a gallon for no good reason, and it shouldn't have happened. Even if Obama loses the next election, He should do what's good for the American people and for their economy. And stuffing the petroleum company's pockets is not good for the American people. And the second reason is, as long as the gas prices are high, Obama has a better chance of getting his agenda through Congress and approved on his energy bill. That's the second part. Get the gas prices up so people are willing to sacrifice a little bit so that they'll have a good supply of energy that they can afford. That's the second part. Okay. Next thing. Unless Mr. Obama's approval ratings hit the bottom, we're not going to see any prosecution coming from his administration over Bush, Cheney, condescending Rice, or any of the other monsters that was in the Bush administration who approved torture that led to the death of people. Because for the same reason, he's going to let the petroleum companies rape you so he can get reelected. Because he knows that if he goes out and starts, you know, investigating this stuff, which should be done, 60% of the people in America don't want it to happen. He's already lost. He's not going to get the loony right. But those people who bend in any direction that they are scared into will not vote for him either. Because 60% of the people in America, by supporting George Bush, is just as guilty of his war crimes as George Bush is. So it's better to look forward, put your blinders on, and move on, and let the past stay in the past, so that no one feels uncomfortable with manning up to what they did. Obama will not prosecute unless his approval ratings go into the 40s. Now, this is what I think is happening. Spain has a number of citizens who were tortured by the Bush administration. Spain has an obligation to address these issues. It is important for them to do that because torture is a crime against humanity. It is a war crime. They have an obligation for their citizens to investigate. And I don't care how crummy these people are or useless they are, it doesn't matter. They're still humans. And we don't do that to humans. Actually, you can get away with it better with humans than you can with animals, because humane society kick your ass, you mess with those animals. You know, do what you want with the humans. Whenever the prosecutors were looking at the case and deciding whether or not they were going to prosecute, Obama sent some people over to talk to the prosecutors. They asked a lot of questions. What do you have on these people? What information do you have? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And the people who were looking into prosecution in Spain, they asked one thing. And they said one thing. Are you, in America, going to prosecute these war criminals? Then they said the one thing. If you do, we will not prosecute them. So, they have information in Spain about people writing some kind of memos, but they don't really have the memos or anything. They don't have the proof. So what Obama does is he releases those memos. Spain now has the proof that they need to go into prosecution. So, here's what I think's happening. Obama's too big of a coward, because he's afraid he's going to lose his seat, to prosecute. So he's putting the information out there, the memos, who approved them. We should get everything, unless someone catches on and says, well, Obama's putting this out there so Spain and other countries can prosecute for us. At that point, it'll all dry up and stop. Now, you know why there's times I just don't want to say anything. But then a realization that the tens of you out there aren't really going to tell Obama, I'm sure. So that's what I think is going on. Next item. Mr. Obama has an opportunity now to appoint somebody to the Supreme Court. Everybody in the news are running around going, oh, it's going to be this liberal, it's going to be this Hispanic, it's going to be this woman, it's going to be this Asian, it's going to be, going to be, going to be. Well, it may be. But it's not going to be a liberal. The Supreme Court justice is not going to be a liberal. Because, I'm sorry guys, you've been projecting yourself upon Mr. Obama. He's not a liberal. He's a good, intelligent man, which means he has some liberal agenda, because liberal agenda is from good people, intelligent people. But Mr. Obama is not a liberal. Conservatives would be pulling out their hair to hear that, because to them, Jesus was a liberal. You know, everybody, well, Jesus was a liberal, wasn't he? Everybody's a liberal except them. The Supreme Court justice that he will try to appoint, maybe a woman, maybe a Hispanic, maybe Asian. I think it's time for an American Indian to be in there, personally. But that person will not be liberal. That person will be conservative and off to the right. Rick, how in the hell can you say that? What makes you say that? It's simple. Look at everybody Obama appointed to his cabinet. Take a look at them. The people who are supposedly cleaning up Wall Street now are conservatives. And they're doing all their cleaning up in private, in secret. We don't know where the money's going. We don't know how things are being done. The same people that helped get us into this mess are the ones who are trying to clean it up now. I'm sorry. The people who are supposedly cleaning up this mess now are Wall Street people. And when it's all said and done, thank you, Mr. Obama, Wall Street is still going to come out ahead and we're still going to be under their thumb. Fact. Okay. Supreme Court nominee will be to the right and conservative. Not as bad as any Republican would pick, but yet still to the right and still conservative. And they're going to make some big decisions that are really going to screw us in the future. Count on it, guys. Rick's prediction. Rick's next prediction. The health care reforms will be done. Microsoft will make a fortune off from it by selling the software that's going to be out there. By the way, Macintosh, have you noticed they don't get computer viruses, but Microsoft gets them constantly? And we're turning over our private healthcare information to Microsoft? That's stupid. That's just plain stupid as shit. Okay? Excuse my language. But sometimes you have to call a spade a damn shovel. To turn our private healthcare information over to Microsoft is retarded. Everything that Microsoft makes can be hacked into and can be crippled with a virus. So we're going to put all of our information so the entire nation can see it. And one day it will all be turned loose, guys. It will. The NSA is going to be snapping it up immediately. They will. Next thing on that issue. As I said, we're going to get some changes to the healthcare system. But it's still going to be crap. And here's the reason why. The only way to get healthcare costs down, to get outcome up, to get the nation healthier, to be able to be affordable, and they're masters in the pharmaceutical and insurance companies, and with our 12 Oreocrats in Congress,
Well, we have the 12 names. I have them right here. I can read them to you very quickly. Max Baucus, Michael Bennett, Robert Byrd, Tom Carper, Byron Dorgan, Tim Johnson, Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, Ben Nelson, Mark Pryor, Arlen Specter, and John Tester.
Is for there not to be an option for a publicly funded health care insurance, something like Medicare. Medicare, guys, when you go into Medicare, what you pay in the Medicare, every dollar that you pay in, 99 cents comes back to you, one penny goes to upkeep for the system. Private insurance companies, for every dollar that you put in, you may get 45 cents back. They keep the other 55 cents and put it in their pocket. There's a gigantic motivation there. Medication will cost you anywhere from 3 to 300 times what it will cost you in Canada or Mexico. They want to keep that up too. Just like the petroleum companies. Got it, guys? So they're putting out tons of money. The Republicans are easy to buy. The 12 Oreocrats in Congress, those supposed to be Democrats who are really, you know, little Democratic shell on the outside, so they have the looks, and inside, fluffy, white Republicans. They are going to stop. Let me repeat it. They are going to stop this health care plan from having a private component that you can buy into. And if they have something that has that name, it will not have the function of really being a private system. Because if they put any such system in place, only the dumbest of the dumb will keep any of the other health care insurance companies. Who in their right mind would pick Aetna over Medicare and take a chance of their daughter dying of a liver disease because Aetna says, that's Aetna. Girl needs a liver transplant. They got the liver. The insurance company says no. She dies. Our congressman and our president, they get annual screenings that screens for everything, including the horrible diseases that they can catch in time to get control over. That's why Specter, that son of a bitch, is still alive. Because they found his early enough, his cancer early enough. Regular insurance companies don't want to find it until you're 2 weeks away from being dead. Because it costs money to fix it. It doesn't matter that you're going to be a productive citizen, you're going to live an extra 20, 30, or 40 years, and that you're going to pay taxes. They don't care about that. Only thing they care about is their money. They don't want to put out the money to keep you alive. They want you to find the disease so you can die fast and save them money. All the private insurance companies are like that. All the private insurance companies are like that. If you think otherwise, you're a moron. They want you to die fast when you have something. They want you to stay completely healthy. But if you do get sick, die fast. And both for the same reason. To save them money. If we have a government-supported healthcare system set up to compete against these insurance companies, they will disappear as they should. As they should. And then America would have a good healthcare system. It's not going to happen, guys. The Republicans are bought and paid for. The 12 Oreocrats are bought and paid for. Got it? They're bought and paid for. There's no way in hell it's going to get past Congress. And I honestly believe that if it got past Congress, it wouldn't get past the White House. But you see, he doesn't have to make that decision right now. He can say, this is what we need. Congress can play like they're doing something right. But the fact of the matter, the Oreocrats and the Republicans in Congress has sold your soul to the satanic insurance and pharmaceutical companies. That is Rick's prediction. That's what I see in my crystal ball. I don't like being pessimistic. I don't like being, well, negative. But I am a realist. Call me a cynic if you wish. Cynic's nothing but an optimist who's smart enough to realize that people aren't going to let the good things that could happen happen. Because of greed and stupidity. Greed and stupidity. They're going to let you die. Because of greed and stupidity, they're going to let you pay twice as much for the gasoline that you have to get to work in your car with. For greed and stupidity. It's all greed and stupidity. And it's not good. Rangers, don't be like the Republicans. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Look at the president with clear eyes and stop projecting your goodness on him, because you're only going to be disappointed, or you're going to have to take another drink of the Kool-Aid when you find out he's not what you think he is.
Maintain the rock and not the people's eyebrows. To keep it highbrow, not to keep it highbrow. Blue collar, $2 chicken, human natures. To keep kicking shit till I'm making union wages. Throw the prey, and he ain't doing you any favors. Many styles, many flavors. Who are you when he majors? In English, two fingers. Catered to the fringes. The landscape made of broke hearts and burned bridges. I've earned vengeance. Cause friends turn bitches. When bitches turn friends and wanna sing on your records. This is protected by me and my selector. You fools crash under the pressure, pressure, pressure. Crooked as investment bankers, crash the tanker. I'm slicker this year, Bob Dance, drop the anchor. Drink away anger, stress give you cankers. Faith is strength, hate puts you in danger. And it ain't what you think it is, what it is. And it's not what you thought it was, what is it? And it ain't what you think it is, what it is. And it's not what you thought it was, what is it? And it ain't what you think it is, what it is. And it's not what you thought it was, what is it? And it ain't what you think it is, what it is. And it's not what you thought it was, no. I'm one of those dudes they never mention. Content with lesser men and R. Kelly references. My preference is keeping to myself and study. But ain't a rapper out there who get it more bloody. I want the respect they reserve for status ass. So hungry cats put my name in their battle raps. The chicks by the Air Force Ones and Avarax. The laser heads strip off my album like lava lamps. Mad at cans. How the fuck you get mad at that? At events, I wanna be where the camera's at. At a chance, sometimes you need another one. At a glance, you may not see where I'm coming from. Some of them suffer from amnesia, and these are people you count on and can't stand either. Take your mind, foreclosures, land seizures. Any means to get it is 100 grand fever. And it ain't what you think it is, what it is. And it's not what you thought it was, what is it? And it ain't what you think it is, what it is. And it's not what you thought it was, what is it? And it ain't what you think it is, what it is. And it's not what you thought it was, what is it? And it ain't what you think it is, what it is. And it's not what you thought it was, what is it? Not a writer, I'm a rhyme provider. Right here, you find a real live reminder of where you were at before you got blind to the game you came into. It's high time he signed a high side and arrogant son of a bitch. One in a mill, I'll be the one if it fits. Coming to kill noise, a silent assassin. Thrown to outbursts, a violent passion. I end up thrashing a track with no mercy. My interactions with rap are so dirty. No words describe what I'm afraid to achieve. I'm 10 steps ahead between you and me. Sight, tell him hell in a handbasket. The felon slight fool, sellouts get stand blasted. Ask Ann Landers for advice they can't handle. The grandstanding of the last heat scandal. And it ain't what you thought it was, what it is. It's not what you think it is, what is it? It ain't what you think it is, what it is. It's not what you thought it was, what is it? It ain't what you think it is.
since that time, I undertook a very thorough survey of Republicans in Pennsylvania with polling and a lot of personal contacts, and it became apparent to me that my chances to be elected on the Republican ticket were bleak. And I'm simply not going to subject my 29-year record in the United States Senate to that Republican primary electorate. I'm not going to do that. Now, with respect to the steamroller, I have shown repeatedly my independence, willing to cross party lines when I thought the interests of the American people in Pennsylvania required it. Take one example. There's a bill on employees' choice, known as card check. Said when I made the switch, I'm still against that bill. Democrats are all for it. Republicans are all against it, and I'm the critical vote. I will continue a filibuster against legislation.
Can you blame him? That's all Inspector, and he just became a member of the Democratic Party. He's our nearest oilcrat. He now makes 12, a solid dozen, out of the oilcrats that are in Congress. I love his little statement. After looking at the electorate and thinking about it, I came to the conclusion that I can't trust those Republicans to vote for me. He can't trust the Republicans. Well, neither can we. And we can't trust you, Republican, oilcrat. That is so sick. Yes, he did vote against the Employee Free Choice Act. In Pennsylvania, a very union state, and he voted against that. After jumping into the Democratic Party, he went ahead and voted against it. Guys, if we vote this guy back in, we're as dumb as the Republicans. That is absolutely stupid that we would invite, I'm sorry, that Obama and welcomed him into the fold. Another damn oilcrat. Now we got a complete dozen. A complete dozen. Democratic on the outside, white fluffy Republican in the middle. Always voting against the best interests of the American people. And they stay in office. And they're given chairmanships. One of the oilcrats is actually the head of the committee looking into how to reform the health care system. And he would not let anybody, none of the doctors that are in the organization trying to push for a public health care system in America, like Medicare, he wouldn't even let them at the table. Closed them out. Then had them arrested. Of course, they stood up and tried a little bit of free speech. But for oilcrats, you get arrested for that. Just like the Republicans that they are. Next part here. I'm going to play it all the way through. I've got to. If you did not hear Keith Overman with this, you've got to hear it. He can say it better than I can. You're also going to hear from Dick Durbin, and you're going to hear from Arianna Huffington. They can handle this much better than I can. I'll be back in a couple seconds with a little commentary. But listen to this, guys. Listen well.
Here is what happened in the new Democratic-controlled steamroller Senate yesterday. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois had an amendment on the floor to save 1,700,000 homeowners from foreclosure. The amendment would have rolled back the law 30 years, once again letting bankruptcy judges cram down mortgages, rewriting them so homeowners could keep their homes, neighbors could keep the value of their homes, and banks would get their loan money back. For the amendment, unions, civil rights, and consumer protection groups, the American Association of Retired Persons. Against the amendment, the American Bankers Association and the Mortgage Bankers Association and a dozen Democratic senators. In our fourth story tonight, guess who won? Illinois Senator Durbin said on Monday ahead of the showdown, quote, the banks, hard to believe in a time when we're facing a banking crisis that many of the banks created, are still the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill, and they frankly own the place. This is the place. And yesterday on the floor, Senator Durbin explained the choice before the Senate.
This is our chance to stand up for the folks across America who send us here to be their voice. They're not lucky enough to have the American Bankers Association as their lobby. They're not lucky enough to have the community bankers as their lobby. They're not lucky enough to have the credit union as their lobby. What we're talking about here are people who don't have any paid lobbyists. What they're counting on is people, senators in this chamber, who will stand up for them. The bankers don't want this. They hate the Durbin Amendment like the devil hates holy water. I hope that the homeowners across America have more friends here than the American Bankers Association. And we're going to get a test vote in a few minutes to find out. I need 60 votes to win.
He got 45 and lost. Winners included Democrat Ben Nelson, who's gotten $1.4 million for banks and real estate, and whose state of Nebraska will lose an estimated 3,700 homes now. Congratulations, Senator. Democrat Mary Landrieu, who has gotten almost $2 million, and whose state of Louisiana will now see an estimated 12,000 homes foreclosed on now. Congratulations, Senator. And, of course, this man, Edward Yingling, president of the American Bankers Association, who told the Washington Post in February, quote, we will lobby very, very strongly. Mission accomplished, buddy. Let's turn now to Arianna Huffington, co-founder and editor-in-chief of HuffingtonPost.com. Good evening, Arianna. Thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you, Keith.
Congresswoman Maxine Waters said in January that the banks, and this was her quote, have owned this Congress way too long. Now Dick Durbin has said essentially the same thing. I thought the Democrats won last year.
Well, unfortunately, Keith, this is a fallacy. The idea that the bankers only have Republican friends. Ever since the Clinton years, Democrats decided to make nice with Wall Street. And remember, it was after all under Bill Clinton that the major FDR passed reforms to try and prevent another financial collapse after the Great Depression. The Glass-Steagall Act was basically the Moby Dick of the financial industry, and they harpooned it during the Clinton years. And here we have, as you said, 12 Democratic senators voting against the public interest.
If Senator Durbin and Congresswoman Waters think that the banks have bought Congress, should they not start naming names? I mean, Dick Durbin's plea on the floor of the Senate was impassioned, but shouldn't he come back out there and just read the Riot Act to those other 11 veteran senators and Senator Specter?
Absolutely. Well, we have the 12 names. I have them right here. I can read them to you very quickly. Max Baucus, Michael Bennett, Robert Byrd, Tom Carper, Byron Dorgan, Tim Johnson, Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, Ben Nelson, Mark Pryor, Arlen Specter, and John Tester. But beyond that, beyond what Dick Durbin can do, he really tried his best. We need Harry Reid to put the pressure on the caucus. We need President Obama, who came out in favor of this reform, but in a very ambivalent way, as Dick Durbin himself said. We need him to actually say enough. Mm-hmm. There isn't going to be one more penny for the bankers. Remember, Keith, on Thursday the stress tests are coming out. And we know perfectly well that the stress tests are going to lead us to more money going to the bankers, unless the American public says enough. We are not going to keep bailing out the same bankers who are blocking major important legislation and also who keep jacking up the credit card rates at the expense of the taxpayer.
If we give that list, as you did, as I did earlier in the show, we should also mention on the other side of it, Evan Bayh, who was flirting with voting no and voted yes, apparently went with his conscience. So let's give him a little credit for that. But back to this point about the banks buying Congress. They now have bought it. The most recent round of investment in Congress has been with our money. What do we do about that realistic aspect that we are, in fact, paying for the very money that is being used against the ordinary citizens?
Well, that is really the outrage. That's why when the president said during his last press conference that he doesn't have a button he can push to make the bankers do what he wants, actually he does. He absolutely does. Were it not for the president's decision to bail out the bankers to the tune of tens of billions of dollars, Citi and Bank of America for sure would not be around today to be paying lobbies to block this legislative reform. That's the reality, Keith. So the president and his economic team, which, let's not forget, was instrumental in a lot of what went wrong on Wall Street, need to basically wake up and realize that the American public is going to be outraged if this continues. And the president's political capital, which right now seems absolutely enormous and unassailable, will not continue to be so forever.
There you have it. As I said, we're not going to get a liberal Supreme Court judge. Obama's going to pick a conservative to the right person. He's going to. Just like he picked his team to clear up this horrible financial problem from the groups of the people who created this horrible financial problem. Do you understand now what I'm saying? And listen to that. Keith said it as clearly as possible. These people have taken bribes. They can call it what they want, campaign contributions. It doesn't matter. They're still bribes to vote against the American people on that bill. Those were the Oreocrats. Those were the Oreocrats. They voted against the card check. They voted against the bankruptcy bill that could help people from losing their homes. The banks would not have lost any money that they put out. They just wouldn't have been able to steal as much money in their overcharges. And they're absolutely right. Citibank would be gone. Bank of America would be gone. But instead, they're here using your money, your tax money, to bribe congressmen, Oreocrats. Oreocrats. And we're sitting here and we're taking it because no one has the damn huevos to stand up and say, Obama, stop it. And as long as we're not saying stop it, it shall not be stopped. It shall not be stopped. Shan't happen. It won't. Because so many of us has partaken of the Kool-Aid, and so many of us are projecting our feelings, our goodness, on Obama. You know, the right wing during Vietnam, they put this wonderful little sticker on the back of their cars. They drive around with it, and the sticker said, "My country, right or wrong." My country, right or wrong. And the statement was, if you don't like this country, get out of it because it's still my country. I don't care if it's right or wrong. It doesn't matter to me. But you know, there was more to that statement than they could put on their bumper sticker. And I'm going to talk to you about bumper stickers one of these days. Republicans are good at those. The statement was this. This is my country, right or wrong. When it's in the right, it is to be kept right. But when it's in the wrong, it is to be set right. That's the full statement. And what I see from so many liberals today, mostly progressives, not so many of the liberals. Liberals tend to be a little bit more understanding. But what I see so much of is my party, my president, right or wrong. Screw the last part where it says, when in the right to be kept right, when in the wrong to be set right. Obama, you're in the wrong. You must be set right. Oreocrats, you are in the wrong. You must be set right. You must be. We can no longer suffer the indignity that you have dumped upon the American people. The Oreocrats must be voted out of office in a primary. All of them, including Specter.
Here is what happened in the new Democratic Senate yesterday. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois had an amendment on the floor to save 1,700,000 homeowners from foreclosure. The amendment would have rolled back the law 30 years, once again letting bankruptcy judges cram down mortgages, rewriting them so homeowners could keep their homes, neighbors could keep the value of their homes, and banks would get their loan money back. For the amendment, unions, civil rights and consumer protection groups, the American Association of Retired Persons. Against the amendment, the American Bankers Association and the Mortgage Bankers Association and a dozen Democratic senators. Guess who won?
started up the hole in your culture. Give me back the Berlin Wall, give me a star in St. Paul. I've seen the future, brother. It is murder.
Took a very thorough survey of Republicans in Pennsylvania with polling, and it became apparent to me that my chances to be elected on the Republican ticket were bleak. And I'm simply not going to subject my 29-year record in the United States Senate to that Republican primary election. I'm not going to do that. Take one example. There's a bill on employees' choice, known as card check, which will take away the secret ballot and impose mandatory arbitration. I said when I made the switch, I'm still against that bill. Democrats are all for it. Republicans are all against it, and I'm the critical vote. Continue a filibuster against legislation.
Senator Durbin said on Monday ahead of the showdown, quote, the banks, hard to believe in a time when we're facing the banking crisis that many of the banks created, are still the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill, and they frankly own the place. And yesterday on the floor, Senator Durbin explained the choice before the Senate.
This is our chance to stand up for the folks across America who send us here to be their voice. They're not lucky enough to have the American Bankers Association as their lobby. They're not lucky enough to have the community bankers as their lobby. They're not lucky enough to have the credit union as their lobby. What we're talking about here are people who don't have any paid lobbyists. What they're counting on is people, senators in this chamber, who will stand up for them. The bankers don't want this. They hate the Durbin Amendment like the devil hates holy water. I hope that the homeowners across America have more friends here than the American Bankers Association. I need 60 votes to win.
He got 45 and lost. Winners included Democrat Ben Nelson, who's gotten $1.4 million for banks and real estate, Democrat Mary Landrieu, who has gotten almost $2 million, and, of course, this man, Edward Yingling, president of the American Bankers Association. Mission accomplished, buddy.
They'll be the breakdown of the ancient Western code. Your private life will suddenly explode. Files on the road, hands away, man dancing. You'll see your woman hanging upside down, her features covered by her father's gown, and all the lousy little poets come around. Trying to sound like Charlie Manson. You're the white man dancing. Give me that burning wall. Give me Stalin and St. Paul. Give me Christ or give me Hiroshima.
Congresswoman Maxine Waters said in January that the banks, and this was her quote, have owned this Congress way too long. Now Dick Durbin has said essentially the same thing. I thought the Democrats won last year.
Well, unfortunately, Keith, this is a fallacy. The idea that the bankers only have Republican friends. Democrats decided to make nice with Wall Street. And here we have, as you said, 12 Democratic senators voting against the public interest.
If Senator Durbin and Congresswoman Waters think that the banks have bought Congress, should they not start naming names? I mean, Dick Durbin's plea on the floor of the Senate was impassioned, but shouldn't he come back out there and just read the riot act to those other 11 veteran senators and Senator Spector?
Absolutely. Well, we have the 12 names. I have them right here. I can read them to you very quickly. Max Baucus, Michael Bennett, Robert Byrd, Tom Carper, Byron Dorgan, Tim Johnson, Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, Ben Nelson, Mark Pryor, Alan Spector, and John Tester. Max Baucus, Michael Bennett, Robert Byrd, Tom Carper, Byron Dorgan, Tim Johnson, Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, Ben Nelson, Mark Pryor, Alan Spector, and John Tester.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
You're listening to Rick's Place on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Hang in there, Rangers. We're fixing to be right back.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear. Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by. Control.
you're crazy. I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy. Just like me. Yeah. My heroes have the heart to lose their lives out on a limb. And all I remember is thinking I wanna be like them. Since I was little, it took life fun. It's no coincidence that I've come. I can die when I'm done. Baby, I'm crazy. Baby, you're crazy. Baby, probably.
Not about anything else.
Go to your room and lock the door, because when you try it once, you want to try it some more. Size doesn't matter, and that's a fact. It might be small, but it's a big impact. Oh. Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of corn nuts and bust a nut. They're lightly toasted and hard as well. Enjoy yourself, we won't tell. Everybody does it, they like it a lot. Just don't get caught. It takes a few minutes if you don't delay. Take your time, make your last all day.
Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of cold nuts and bust a nut. They're lightly toasted and hard as well.
Enjoy yourself, we won't tell.
Corn Nuts, an intensely crunchy corn snack, comes in 7 nut-busting flavors. Bust a nut at a convenience store near you.
Welcome back, Rangers, to Rick's Place. Now, here's the number one ranger, the proprietor of Rick's and Horn's psychotherapist, Rick Goodner.
Though the land's been torn, I'm alone.
Okay, Rangers, we're back. This is Rick Goodner, and you're at Rick's Place here at Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Well, you're back for the second half of the show at Rick's Place. The issue is that the first hour and the second hour are actually separated by a week. You see, after I finished the first hour, before it was even completely finished, but, you know, everything except the music finished, we had us a nice little storm that came through, and then we had the place rearranged a little bit. A few buildings, a few signs, a few, major parts of the city was taken down so it can be renewed and repaired. We call that renewal a tornado. Not too bad. No one hurt. Mostly just the weaker buildings going down. Something better coming up in this place, maybe. But, like I said, this part is separated by a week. So, things have happened during this week. And during this week, I have spent some time on blogs. And I have noticed that since Nancy Pelosi had her little run-in with the CIA, and the CIA basically called her a liar, that yes, she was told. She was told this, this, and this, and this. Well, of course, you know, Bob Graham, a man I do respect, he's retired now. I wish he didn't retire. Senator Graham said, you know, Nancy Pelosi is actually telling the truth. They didn't tell me this stuff either. And when they sent me the information on how many times that they told me about what was going on, they said it was four times. Well, it turns out it was only one time. And they never mentioned to me anything about waterboarding being done. This isn't new. I've heard Mr. Graham say that before. A couple years ago, I believe, something to that effect, that he never heard anything about waterboarding. So we have an issue there. The CIA, by law, the administration must order the CIA to give all the information that's important to Congress. They can't do oversight without it. Now, if it turns out that the information that was given was not factual, then the CIA would be in a bit of trouble, wouldn't they? Now, we already have Obama saying, hey, baby, I'm going to cover your ass. Don't worry about it. As long as you stay within the law. But you see, if they didn't do this, they would not have been in the law. So the CIA hands out a little bitty note saying, oh, Nancy Pelosi knew everything. She knew everything. It's an old mafia trick. You go in, you say, you know, someone should rob that bank. Say that to anybody. Maybe a lawyer. Maybe a prosecutor or a judge. And then you go and rob the bank. And then when you get caught, you come back and say, well, you're in this too. You got to get me out of this trouble. You're part of it too. What do you mean I'm part of it? Well, I told you I was going to rob the bank. No, you said somebody was probably going to rob the bank. No, I told you I was going to rob the bank. You are an accessory. You get me out or you're going down too. Now, this is what's being played. So, if that's what's being played. But the letter that came out from the CIA had a little note attached to it from the director saying, I cannot verify that this is factual. In other words, I'm not going to say these guys are telling you the truth. Another cover in the ass. So the question remains, would the CIA lie to us? Would the Central Intelligence Agency lie? Would people whose profession is to be deceptive lie? Would a group of people who pretend that they're something that they're not really are, who would go into a country and pretend that they're somebody completely different,
and get information, steal information, would they lie? Would deceptive, stealing people lie? What a question. I wonder what the answer to that would be. You know, there's a way to find out what the answer would be. The CIA is set up with orders that they cannot do any operations whatsoever in the United States of America. Now, if they lied to Congress, that is a breach of the law. If they use their clandestine wiles to deceive and mislead Congress and the President and the Justice Department, would that not be an operation within the United States of America? Is that not against the law as well? And if it is, wouldn't that bear some investigation? You know, if we only had an organization that has a long history and a great experience of working with organized criminals, that could kind of take control of this issue and go and do some investigation. You know, go in, grab up some files, lock down some computers. Don't interfere with the stuff that's going on overseas. Keep everything working. But grab non-essential computers and other information not related to overseas operations at this point in time. They could pull that back and the Justice Department could take a look at it and find out if crimes were being committed, if lies are being told. I'm not saying the CIA would do anything like that. They're an organization based upon the premise of we're not who we say we are, and we are going to deceive you, and if you got something we want, we're going to take it. And now, if we don't like what you're doing, we're going to torture you. So I think we need such an organization that can go and do that. Oh, Rick, that's right. That's what the FBI does. So why doesn't the FBI go in, take those computers, lock down the files, and do some investigation? Wouldn't that be magnificent? Now, I'm saying that because you have these two organizations that basically hate each other. Now, they work okay together, but there's been times when one has tripped up the other. So, you know, they're not too happy with each other anyway. And if you have a bunch of federal agents that shows up one morning with guns and a warrant at the CIA, don't you know that before the end of the day's out, you're going to have every squealer in the CIA telling the truth about everything that happened? Why do you have so much CYA now going on in the CIA? CIA, CYA. Because at the beginning of this garbage that Bush and the Republican Party pushed upon us, Bush was not able to work with the CIA because there was a bunch of professionals in there who knew what was moral, who knew what was right, and who would not torture. So they got them to resign, or they fired them, and they replaced them with flunkies. So now we have inside the CIA a bunch of Republican, Retardican flunkies. Gee, would they set up a Democrat? I don't know. I think they're too professional to do something like that. I think they're too patriotic to do something like that. I think they're honorable men and women who want the best for America, who would never do anything illegal, who would never torture, who would never lie about what the Congress was informed on. And I think we need to prove it. And the way to prove it is to go in and get the facts and have it investigated. We are now to that limit. We are now to that point. We are now to that destination. We have an organization that has been rogue. They have been doing things completely on their own, completely out of the realm of our Constitution. Maybe. I don't know for sure. But I think we need to look into it. Now, is that going to happen? Hell no. Of course it's not. Obama ain't got the spine. He ain't got the huevos, man. And Congress? Congress isn't going to do anything. Half the Congress is Republicans. Yeah, I know some of them have a D behind their name, but they're Oreocrats. We have an enormous amount of Oreocrats, supposedly members of the Democratic Party, who are nothing but damn Republicans. And we have the Republicans. So nothing's going to be done. You can't get anything done. You have cowards in high places and crooks in high places. And then the honorable people, the Democratic Party, the real Democrats in the Democratic Party, can't seem to get anything done because Republicans are still here as well as in the CIA. So, as I started out this little segment, I said that I've been on blogs. And I have been reading an awful lot. And I kind of get my blood up. What do I hear over and over? What do I read over and over? Pelosi's a liar. Therefore, the Democrats are liars. Liars, 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 liars. All over the place. There is absolutely no logic whatsoever. It is Pelosi has lied. We're not looking at any other evidence. Pelosi has lied, which fits into their worldview that the Democrats have lied, which fits into their worldview that liberals are pansy pussies who lie. And so I made my presence known. I cut and paste. I cut and paste facts. Boom, 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 one after the other. How did they come back? Did they come back with facts? No. They came back with, you're crazy. You don't know what you're doing. You're going to let us all get killed. That kind of stuff. That kind of stuff. But I continued to play nice. I kept going, facts, 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 facts. But these people, they're in a feeding frenzy. They think they smell Pelosi's blood on the water and being the sharks that they are, they're running around biting at the liberals, biting at the Democratic Party. But I go ahead and I continue. I do the same thing. Here are the facts. Here's what's happened. And so I'd finally get to the point where I'd win a conversation about, we don't really know if Pelosi lied because the head of the CIA said this that we're sending out may not be true, and that there are other people who say, well, guess what? They didn't inform me either. But yeah, the Republicans say, oh, they told me, they told me, they told me. Well, what we got there is complicity. If they were told, then they're complicit in the crime. If the Republicans were told and they agreed with it and they sat there silently, they're complicit. And my point that I sent to the bloggers was, if Pelosi is lying, she should also be tried along with Bush. Now, that completely went over their head. Yes, she should be tried, but Bush shouldn't. And so I send back, what's your logic? Pelosi should be tried for a criminal act because she was told about a criminal act. But Bush, who's in charge of the criminal act, should not be tried? And one fool actually said, yeah. Like it was logical. Do they not see the irony? Oh no, irony is a deep, deep form of humor. They'd never be able to see irony. then it just slides off and everything. I mean, they hit everything in the world. Gay, abortion, terrorists, 9/11. One of them even took the little screen name I was using. By the way, it's Badass Liberal. And this kind of upset me. They took my screen name and then wrote in, I'm happy 9/11 happened. I'm glad all those people got killed. I hate America. I hate everything about it. I can't wait for America to be destroyed. That kind of pissed me off. I kind of lost my temper. And in my moment of divine insanity, I sent a little note saying, here's my email address. I gave it. Contact me. You have lied. You have used my name to smear me and to smear liberals and to smear Democrats. You have lied. You are a lying little... You know, I had to put the stars and everything in because you can't cuss on those things. They kind of screen you out when you do. And I just made it very clear that they were chicken shits and they were liars and they were bastards. And I wanted them to contact me on the email so we could set up a nice little meeting. Bang. It stopped. The feeding frenzy stopped. Then an anonymous person writes back and says, I can't meet you because I'm not gay. Fine. So I send back a nice little thing again. And it stops. No movement. Everybody's just sitting there kind of holding their breath. Now, I shouldn't have lost my temper, but I do lose my temper. And I did apologize for it later. I said, look, don't lie about me. Take my words, but don't lie about me. And don't sit there and say that Democrats lie and then lie about me. If you're man enough to do something like that, then you need to be man enough to face me one-on-one. Everything's still nice and quiet. Then it starts going smoother. And then the Republicans start picking up again because I'm silent and I'm just reading. And it starts picking up and it starts going back into the frenzy again. We got to torture. Yeah, they did change the subject. We got to torture. It's okay because we got to do it. It's going to save lives. It did save lives. We stopped this. We stopped that. So I sent them proof that they tortured an insane man. The FBI said he was insane. They were not getting anything out of him. When he finally broke under their torture, and he told all kinds of stuff about shopping malls, skating rings, nuclear facilities, public parks. You remember all these things where they were sending out those warnings just for the election when in 2004 or whatever that was. I'm not sure, but sometime around there. It was during the before election. And everybody was running over the place looking for these terrorists. Well, they tortured him into saying what they wanted him to say, which was that there was going to be more terrorist attacks. The torture did not work. The CIA, the FBI, the reasonable people still in there, in the CIA, said that they got garbage from him. And then it sent thousands of uniformed people out to check over the Brooklyn Bridge and nuclear power plants and make sure that everything was safe because an insane person was tortured into telling garbage. It doesn't work. So, it's there. It has names of the FBI agents. It has names of the CIA agents. It's all there. It's all cut and paste. It's all in there nice and logical. But see, I'm not dealing with logic. And so one guy kind of writes back and says, well, I don't care. We should do it anyway. Torture them anyway. Torture everybody. Everybody should be tortured. Then I write back, WWJD. What would Jesus do? A little bit more silence. I wasn't going to let it go at that. I write back, you fools. Do you not realize that your Christ, your deity, was tortured to death? Do you think that he would approve of torturing another person? Everything slows down again for a while. Then a dummy pops up and says, well, if we're saving lives, it's okay. It doesn't matter. It's okay. Saving lives, it's okay. And those people are not human anyway. I wrote back, so, my friend, you are ready to go to hell for this torture. My new friend wrote back, what? And so I put, whatsoever you do unto these, you do to me. It's in the Bible, words of Jesus. If you torture, you torture Jesus. So you're torturing Jesus again. You condone the torture. You're saying it's okay. It's not just going to be Bush. It's not just going to be the torturers. You are enabling it. You are torturing. And according to Jesus, whatever you do to other people, you're doing to him. So you are now torturing him again. And Jesus' words were best. I couldn't have said it better. Paraphrasing, of course. Everything's paraphrased that I do. And he said, sinner, I do not know you. Be gone. And then I added to it, put the person's screen name in and said, is it getting hotter in there? Click, click, click. It will. That ended it. That ended it. After that, there was a conversation with a group of people from both sides who had different ideas, different thoughts on the issue, but they discussed it logically. They discussed it in a way that actually people were being moved from one side to the other who weren't on those sides before. Because before, it was name-calling and anger and hatred. I, in my little bitty place, was able to bring a little bit of sanity back into the situation. Number one, I convinced them I'm a liberal, but I'm not a pacifist. You're not going to step on me. Number two, here's the logic. They have trouble with logic. Number three, here's your belief systems. Here's what your Christ has said. Under your belief system, you believe what Christ said. And Christ said that if you torture other people, or if you don't feed other people, or if you leave people to die in the cold, then you're doing it to him. Therefore, if you're supporting torture, you're torturing him. And then he said, you're a sinner if you don't take care of these things that he said to do. Therefore, you're going to be sent away, burning in hell. It took me a while to figure out how to bring it back in to a form that a retardican could understand. Logic doesn't work. Fear works, and they fear hell. Also, kind of helps when I call them retardicans because it really pisses them off. It's too close to home. You tell a retardican they're retarded, and they get very defensive. He actually tried it on me and called me a dementocrat. I thought that was funny. I liked it. I started using it. I thought it was real cute. It didn't work on me because I'm not crazy, and I know it. But they are one step away, and they know it. They are not too bright. And no matter how much they lie to themselves and try to convince themselves, no matter how much they listen to Rush Limbaugh say, my friends, you are smart enough. Fox News. Well, you report, you decide. You're smart enough to know what to do with the news. The fact is, anybody who would fall for those two things is an idiot. Okay. they are idiots. So it's not hard to break through their armor about whether or not they're intelligent. Because deep down they know they're not. Although they are denying the fact, confirmational bias, that they're stupid, they know they really are. That's why they fight so hard to prove how smart they are. That's why when any light comes in that shows that maybe, the system really was good and their system really did work and Pelosi's really an evil liar and the Democrats are evil liars and they're right and we're wrong,